What should I be feeding my pet is a question you hear every day. DVM 360 has answers. Join our Fetch Encore virtual symposium, Fueling Better Outcomes with Nutrition, on Sunday, May 17th. Earn 6 live CE credits from 4 veterinarian nutrition experts in just one day. Sign up now. And that's only the beginning. Fetch Encore is DVM 360's new way of bringing the personalized learning experience of Fetch veterinarian conferences directly to you. Check out more Fetch Encore throughout 2026. Cardiology, pain management, NAVLE guidance, tech talk, and feline medicine.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. Nutritional dermatoses, we've never covered that here on the podcast, and I'm so excited to learn more about it. And joining us is our wonderful colleague, board-certified veterinary dermatologist, Dr. Robert Ward's in the house. How are you, my friend?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us. And, you know, the power of connecting via social media with us and LinkedIn and getting to know more about you and all the great work that you're doing. So just excited to learn more about this topic because, like I said, we haven't covered it. We know it's important. So let's get into it. So a little bit more information about Dr. Ward. He completed his dermatology residency at Vader Clinic in Morristown, Ontario, as well as an MSc in pathobiology at the University of Guelph. And he obtained board certification from the American College of Veterinary Dermatologists not that long ago, 2024. Congratulations. And he became president of the Canadian Academy of Veterinary Dermatology last year. He's been heavily involved with promoting education and veterinary dermatology on a national scale, which is fantastic. And outside of work, Dr. Ward is an avid rugby supporter and dabbles in home brewing. He also enjoys exploring the local areas with his wife, Jessie, and indulging his spoiled French bulldog, who will be making a little appearance. Ellie's in the house. And Ellie has allergies, I understand.
Ellie, of course, has allergies. It's almost a necessary part of being a dermatologist is to have an itchy dog that you, for the most part, ignore, but try desperately to control. So I'm certainly not the only dermatologist out there that has a bit of an itchy dog.
Not at all. I know several of them. Okay, so let's chat about this. So nutritional dermatoses, it's one of those things that I kind of keep on the back as a general practitioner when I'm seeing them coming in. It's like I always say to myself, I wonder if if it's that. It's not something I jump to right away, but talk us through like some of the more common ones that we see and what does that look like?
And I think that there's a very good reason that one, it's not necessarily the forefront of people's mind, and two, you haven't had it on the podcast so far because they're less common these days. I mean, for the most part, a lot of our owners are doing a lot of research. The research that's gone into picking and formulating pet diets over the past 50 years has been staggering. I mean, people used to just give dogs whatever the butcher had and biscuits and chum, really. And now a lot more thought goes into making a balanced diet. However, we do still see nutritional deficiencies and nutritional dermatoses for a series of reasons. One is that, you know, biologically appropriate raw foods and other homemade diets are becoming increasingly trendy. They sort of go through phases of popularity. And so as a result, people that are formulating their own diets and don't necessarily have a background in nutrition sometimes miss things. And that's completely understandable. So definitely these dermatoses are something to have at the back of our minds. But I must say that they're a lot less common, at least amongst our companion animals, as they were in the past. Now, with exotics, these are our sort of small rodents, our reptiles, our birds. They are them and husbandry issues are almost the forefront of kind of issues that we can see with them.
Yeah, it's so interesting you said that. I didn't even think of it that way, but you're right. You see so much associated with exotics and birds. Okay, so what are some of the more common ones that we should keep on our list?
Absolutely. So probably the most common one that I see, and I think every practitioner who regularly sees dogs will see it eventually, is zinc-responsive dermatosis. And this is the dermatosis that we see in Arctic breeds. And this isn't necessarily due to a deficiency in the amount of zinc that they are provided. It's more of an inability for them to appropriately absorb the zinc there. And they can have pretty classic lesions. They can have sort of periocular and perioral crusting. They can get crusting on their pressure points. Sometimes they can get infections and erythema. There can be variable itch there as well. And so these cases can be very, very satisfying to spot almost as they come through the door if you know what you're looking for, but also have very classic histopathological findings. So if you're in doubt with any of these, then definitely a biopsy can be beneficial to try and narrow down your differentials there. And that tends to respond fairly well to zinc supplementation. But I'd say the number one sort of nutritional dermatosis that I see is probably zinc responsive dermatosis.
Yeah, that's a big one. And like you were saying, when I have diagnosed it is rewarding. It's quite rewarding just to see like that how quickly they respond to treatment, which is great. So that's great. Okay, what else?
Well, zinc also has a couple of other things. So sometimes the amount of zinc in the diet isn't quite enough for a really large dog or that's growing or very metabolically active. So there's a few different sort of flavors of zinc responsive dermatosis. The classic one, the syndrome one, is what we talked about. It's the Arctic breeds, the genetic inability to really absorb that. But then there's syndrome two, which is more of a generic dog food dermatosis. And we see that in large breeds, often fed sort of poor quality diets. And sometimes, even if there's fundamentally enough zinc in them, their demands just exceed the amount they're getting. And so those ones are generally temporary. Sometimes you just need to balance their diet a little bit. And they tend to not need zinc supplementation lifelong with those ones. And then there's a few different flavors that we see. So there's been a few papers over the past few years, one that came out from a dermatology resident, even just this last year, that have looked at Boston Terriers with sort of a pinal margin parakeratosis, as well as French Bulldogs as well. And here's a nice example of a French Bulldog. Fortunately, it doesn't
There
have
she is.
the ear margins, but you'd see the kind of crusting around the ear margins here, and that's variably responded quite well to zinc as well. So outside of that, we kind of find there's Faroe hounds that can have poorly absorbed zinc, as well as lethal acrodermatitis that is seen in bull terriers. So those are the common zinc associated ones, but outside of zinc we definitely see some other dermatoses, things like in cats, if they're fed a lot of fatty fish, they can get sort of a vitamin E responsive pansteatitis. And so really a lot of these nutritional dermatoses occur when they're fed unbalanced diets or diets high in either nutrients or minerals, which might inhibit the absorption of other things that are necessary for their metabolism.
Absolutely. For some reason, I was a magnet for hypovitaminosis A for patients.
Really?
I know, right? So tell us a little bit more about that one.
Absolutely. So hypovitaminosis A is classically seen in Cocker Spaniels, and it's a tricky one. I think that vitamin A is sort of a is a retinoid derivative anyway, and so I think it in itself has the ability to help regulate the epidermal turnover. So one of the classic symptoms of hypovitaminosis A was this kind of seborrheic coat that you'd see, and sometimes it would be on the pineal margin, sometimes it would be over the coat. And with that, they would respond quite well to vitamin A supplementation. But I do wonder whether some of these nutritional dermatoses that would respond quite well to nutritional supplementation, whether it's with a vitamin or a certain mineral, could be phenotypes of other diseases that we just weren't really sure of at the time, but they just happened to respond. So I see less and less, and I'm not sure whether this is your experience these days. I've seen less and less hypovitaminosis A over the years, and that could just be because we're identifying other underlying causes, like sort of an allergic or a Malassezia overgrowth that potentially sort of with the improvement of their barrier that vitamin A sort of provided, maybe we're kind of seeing less of that now. But I also think that these are geographically dependent as well. You might have a colony of cocker spaniels that don't absorb vitamin A quite as sufficiently, and you'll get hot spots of these around the country, and they'll pop up and down. But I certainly haven't seen that one in a while, and I'm not sure whether in your experience you've been seeing it as much recently, but I'm interested to know.
Yeah, not as much now, but man, I saw so many that had that severe seborrhea and that greasy coat, that follicular hyperkeratosis. And so, as soon as we started changing the diet or adding that in addition to obviously treating the underlying disease like bacteria and so forth, they did really, really well. And it was always the Cocker Spaniel.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that so much, I mean, I've got to say, both prescription and other diets have so much more thought that's been put into their formulation these days to supplement some of these vitamins and minerals that potentially were deficient in some diets in the past.
Yeah, totally. And speaking of, I know that a lot of pet owners love to give fatty acids, but some dogs can have a deficiency of like omega-6 fatty acids, like a linoleic acid, right? Is that another kind of deficiency that's out there?
So with the fatty acids, they're kind of a fascinating sort of area, and dermatologists learn a lot about them. And part of the reason that dermatologists learn a lot about them is that in the past, we really had steroids, antihistamines, and then fatty acids and a lot of different shampoos. And we've been blessed in the last 20 years with a series of different pharmaceutical products. So we don't use a lot of fatty acids as much anymore, but I still think they have an important role in a lot of treatment plans. So with fatty acids, there's really they can be broken down into two main types that we use sort of biologically. We have omega-3 fatty acids, which for all intents and purposes, we kind of consider that the anti-inflammatory one. It kind of competes to with omega-6 fatty acids, which are a bit more pro-inflammatory, to help regulate the inflammatory response via the arachidonic acid pathway. And these can help sort of just they can help with a ton of different diseases. There's some good papers out there with atopic dermatitis in particular, but I've used fatty acids for a lot of different immune mediated diseases there. Obviously not alone, but like in sort of alongside other medications as well. Whereas the omega-6 fatty acids, with that's more kind of for barrier restoration. The linoleic acid is it goes towards the ceramides. And then we have our omega-6 fatty acids. And the way I think of them is they're more barrier function there. So certainly you pointed out linoleic acid, and that is a part of the ceramides. And that helps kind of fill the brick and mortar structure of the skin and make sure that's sort of a semi-impermeable barrier. And they did a lot of studies in mice, particularly where they were deficient in omega-6 fatty acids, and their tail was scaly and crusty and prone to infection. So omega-6 fatty acids are a vital part of treatment there. And I particularly use them for things like SLO, so symmetrical leukoid onychodystrophy, just to try and restore both the skin and the nail barrier. Now with omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids, it's really tricky because dogs fundamentally can't absorb some of these. So using over-the-counter products can be really prone to, even though they on the label they say they have a certain amount of fatty acids, the amount that dogs can specifically absorb really in the EPA and the DHA can be pretty limited. So I tend to stick to a lot more veterinary products with this. But definitely they can be a really vital part of treatment plan for some of these dermatoses here.
Yeah, excellent. Another one that I see or we talk about is biotin deficiency. And we're looking at, say, some of those dogs that have like that brittle hair or like alopecia, seborrhea, dermatitis. Tell us a little bit more about that one.
Biotin deficiency is not something that I come across that much, to be honest. I tend to focus more on of the deficiencies that I typically will see. I will use omega fatty acids, and I'll use vitamin A for various kind of epidermal turnover conditions. I'll use vitamin C if I have kind of concerns about collagen. And I'll use vitamin E because it can act as a bit of an antioxidant as well, but I can't say that I use too much biotin there. Usually, when they have this dull, brittle hair coat, there's other things going on aside from just biotin, whether it's an endocrinopathy like Cushing's disease or hypothyroidism. So I think aside from nutritional dermatoses, having an idea of whether they've got a metabolic problem that impairs their ability to process some of the nutrients that are available to them is important to consider as well.
Yeah, absolutely. There are any others that we should be considering?
I guess copper. Copper is an important enzyme as well, and that's deeply rooted in melanogenesis, so the development of pigment. And so copper is a coenzyme for tyrosinase, and tyrosinase is the main enzyme, and that's the one that all the dermatology residents out there needs to know because that will probably appear on an exam at some point. And so with that, if they are deficient in copper, they can actually develop a bit of a reddish coat, and that's just because they're not producing as much And this can happen in dogs and cats, but they're not producing enough eumelanin, which is a black pigment there. And instead, they're kind of forced to produce pheomelanin, and that's more of a yellowish red. And so there was a well documented, well, it was well documented amongst breeders and owners, and we almost dismissed it a little bit until we did experiments where we found that these copper deficient patients were developing a lighter, more red coat, and it was kind of dubbed red coat syndrome. And we don't see it much because copper is generally supplemented in these diets at appropriate levels, but we can see it occasionally there.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to know. And last but certainly not least is protein deficiency.
Yeah, absolutely. So protein is a vital part of the hair. In fact, a ton of our metabolic energy goes towards producing protein for the hair and the coat and the skin. And so a lot of very, very poor quality diets can have a lack of protein, and they can get a very poor coat and lacking in hair. But we also see some conditions in which the protein can't be utilized. And probably one of the most popular, the most well-recognized ones is hepatocutaneous syndrome. And hepatocutaneous syndrome has a bunch of different names to it. But fundamentally, the dogs are not able to utilize these amino acids that they would otherwise need to for their coat and their skin. And they can get a crusting dermatosis. And certainly that has a key nutritional part of management there. I mean, aside from trying to support the liver or remove a glucuronoma there, certainly adding high protein to the diet can really help supplement and give them the protein they need to produce their coat there. So protein deficiencies, not as common as normal, but we still see them when they have relative deficiencies due to an underlying disease there.
Yeah, it's excellent. Another one to keep on our list. I like that we're chatting about this because, yeah, sometimes it's hard to make the correlation from derm to nutrition. You know, it's like, you get kind of wrapped up in other things like malassezia and bacteria, autoimmune, but this is certainly a differential that we should definitely have on that list.
And unfortunately for dermatologists, but nutrition is so interlinked with dermatology. And one thing that we haven't really talked about at all, because it's not really a nutritional dermatosis, it comes under the allergy umbrella, but food allergies are a huge part of dermatology. So certainly working up these patients for a food allergy when you've got a non-seasonally itchy pet is very, very important. And in doing that, you've got to make sure that if you are doing home cooked diets, then you're not missing a nutritional deficiency that could lead to more problems down the line. So definitely dermatologists usually have a nutritionist that they can contact for these sort of issues there. And unfortunately, a lot of dermatology is, I mean, you are what you eat.
Yeah, absolutely. Dr. Robert Ward, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Thank you for all the great work you're doing.
No problem. It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning in, everyone. Don't forget to rate the podcast as we continue to grow. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast Podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.